When your company earns unlimited 2% cash back on all purchases with Capital One, that's serious business. So, Steven at SandCloud got a serious business card, the Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One.
We used our 2% cash back to help build our retail presence.
Savvy, Steven.
And we get big purchasing power, so our business can spend more and earn more.
The Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One. What's in your wallet?
Terms and conditions apply. Find out more at CapitalOne.com/SparkCashPlus.
Welcome back to another episode of Trading Secrets. I'm your host, Jason Tarek, and welcome, I'm going to just say, to the whole segment. Usually I say the pre-market trading segment before we ring in the main guest, but this one is a little different. And it's a little different because we have the Golden Bachelorette on, Joan, but we were only given 15 to 20 minutes with her. So in this episode, David and I are going to kick the tires a little bit. We're going to then bring in Joan. And then from there, we're going to recap the first Golden Bachelorette ever. And we're going to do it in a business format. So if you missed the episode, you will be caught up to speed because we'll be talking about careers, takeaways, etc. And if you saw the first episode of the Golden Bachelorette, you'll definitely be with us. But let's just talk about this. The Golden Bachelorette is the lowest rated premiere in franchise history in the 18 to 49 demo. The ratings for last Wednesday are in, and the Golden Bachelorette got a 0.29 in the 18 to 49 demo. In comparison, the Golden Bachelor premiere was a 0.63. That makes it the lowest rated premiere in franchise history. The record prior was previously held by Charity's season premiere, which got a 0.35. David, you're with me here before we bring Joan in. I want to talk about just theory on the business results here. Why do you think we're seeing the lowest rated premiere in franchise history with the Golden Bachelorette? In 24, it's actually been a really high ride. You had the Golden Bachelor, which kind of like, you know, reignited the franchise. You had Joey's season, which was off the charts. Jen's season was struggling, but had a massive, massive finale, which the whole country was talking about. And now we're here just a couple of weeks after that big finale and a whole lot of news. What's your take on the business, the numbers of what we're seeing in the Bachelor franchise with this Golden Bachelorette premiere?
Yeah, I think I got three things. One, a Wednesday night premiere is so different for The Bachelor. We've seen Mondays, we've seen Tuesdays. I can't ever recall a Wednesday. So that's just creature of habit. I think the Golden Bachelor started with such a bang. And I think the way that it ended with, it was all with the wedding and then the breakup, and it just didn't end that well. So I wonder if people are still believing in the concept at the start. And then maybe people are just too busy watching Joey crush it on Dancing with the Stars. And they say that I'll get to the Golden Bachelorette after that, because you got a lot of Bachelor Nation people on TV right now. I think business-wise, those are maybe my top three that come top of mind. But quickly, I think Jen's season really started, her premiere outperformed other premieres in the last, I think, three seasons. And I think it dropped a lot during the season. Like you said, you saw a spike in the finale. I think Joan's season, you said it started low. I think it's going to skyrocket high. I'm definitely going to be loyal to this season because I was so blown away and impressed by the first episode.
I thought it was an unbelievable episode too. You just mentioned a bunch of things. If we go back to the Golden Bachelor series, the inaugural season averaged 9.92 million multi-platform viewers across linear and digital after 35 days of viewing. That is absolutely huge. Absolutely huge. So the other thing you mentioned, David, was Dancing with the Stars. You're right. There's a lot of ABC action here. Dancing with the Stars, I learned from Bachelor Data, gained 200,000 plus viewers. The demo in that age range was 0.73. The demo change was up 12.31%. The U.S. viewers, 4.9 million. There's a lot of action here. I also think one of the reasons it struggled a little bit is we have seen the catastrophic and utter shit show from the finale of Jen's season with Devin. I mean, what a train wreck. When you're showing these private texts with intimate moments, And just, I mean, there's a million things. We could do a whole episode on this. You're showing private texts with intimate things that should never be out there. You know, the show missed a little bit. No, the show missed a lot of it with restraining orders and background checks. It's like the most utter shit show if you look at the last 2-3 weeks. And now you have this beautiful Golden Bachelorette premiere with a show of, like, it feels like such dignity and class and tears and movement. And I think it's exactly what we need, but I'm wondering if there's too many lingering effects from two things. One, the Golden Bachelor not working out, there being issues with that relationship very soon after the wedding. And two, it's like a hangover after this Devin disaster.
The controllables need to be controlled better. The screening of the guests needs to be controlled better. That'll avoid a lot of things. And the training after, whether it be media training or therapy or things of that nature, to train these people after. When they're on the show, there's not a lot of controllables. They're on a show. They're on a TV show. They're there for whatever reasons they're there for once the cameras are rolling. Those are not as controllable. And the way that it ended, like you said, it was a train wreck. And I think poor Bachelor Data, shout out, she's been getting up at 2:30 in the morning reporting from bed and on the, all these stories that are coming out. But like you said, the dignity, the class of the feeling of watching the Golden Bachelorette, it's why I turn on my TV. I don't like turning on my TV and watching the 5 o'clock news to hear about 4 murders and 3 accidents and 2 arrests and this court case that's going on. I want to turn on my TV and feel good. Lately, when I've been watching The Bachelorette and sometimes The Bachelor, I don't feel great because it's drama related. This episode was awesome. It was heartwarming. There were some sad stories, but you see people in such a unique light and talking about such depth things. When the first rose got handed out, and said he got a standing ovation when he walked in the room. He was getting hugs. He was getting handshakes. There was moral support there. That type of thing, this group, I'm really, really excited for the show. And I've been nothing but impressed with Joan from the interview and all of the press that I've seen in her first episode. I am really, really excited for this.
I'm excited to get into it. And things I will ask, of course, are all about her appetite on moving. We know that that was an issue in the last relationship with Gary and Teresa not being able to move, which makes sense. You're rooted at that age. Your family's there. Your life is there. To pick up and move everything is a big challenge. We know that prenups were a big topic of discussion in the news with Gary and Teresa. We talk about prenups. And one of my favorite things about Joan in her interview is her stern stance with pure answers. You know, every time I get a lead on this show, it's always we're beating around the bush. I'm dancing, I'm bobbing and weaving. How could I get something with actually, you know, substance? Because it's so hard with all the media cuts and corners. Joan was amazing, refreshing. Hey, this is how I feel. I'll step into it. Here's my answer. I don't care if you like it. This is who I am. Take it or leave it. And that's what you're going to see here soon. But let's talk a little bit of business, David. You know, we're in a new era here when we talk about senior citizens, when we start going up into these ages. There's a lot to consider here. So I want to throw some stats at you, and I want you to tell me which surprised you the most. Senior citizens of the United States, 57.8 million adults age 65 plus are living in the United States. That's as of 2022. Among those adults 65 plus in 2023, 59% of them live with their spouse. 28% lived alone. 89,000 people age 100 plus are living in the United States as of 2022. And that is more than double the number in 1980. Of all those numbers, which we love to throw numbers around those podcasts, which surprised you the most?
Would you say 57% of them still live with their spouse? I think that is the most surprising number, only because when you take divorce rates, which are close to 50%, and then you take obviously, you know, the age of living, the age of life into account, I think that that 50% number of them still living with their spouse, I think all things considered in where we are as a society, I think that's the most surprising. I think that's higher than I would have expected. Yeah. It makes me happy because the thought of growing old and living by yourself, whether it be for divorce or death, it just saddens me. So that's a surprising, but an uplifting number.
This is the example, everybody, of a glass half full and glass half empty situation. David is taking a very glass half full approach to the stat that among adults 65 plus in 2023, 59% of them lived with their spouse or partner. That was the number. To me, I was like, oh, wait a second. 28% lived alone? Like, that is so sad. And I think what I learned in this first episode, which we'll recap and talk about their occupations and everything after the Joan interview, is that there are so many people that are considered senior citizens in this country, and we are living so much longer, and their years spent in this chapter of their life is so significant, and they're so lonely. And that makes my heart break. Imagine at that age, you've lost the people you've loved with everything, the people you've built families with. You know, you've aged. You're not the same old youngster you are. A lot of ways your mind and body want to work, they don't work. And you're lonely at home. Like, that is, I feel like we're onto something with this show. And by the way, most of them aren't working anymore. So it's like all you have is time to sit in that. I think there is something bigger here that this show is bringing attention to. And I love it for that. David, we'll get into retirement now before we bring in Joan. Retirement in the U.S. in 2023, 11.2 million Americans at the age of 65 plus were working or seeking employment. Women represented 46% of all older workers. 9.5% of the civilian labor force is expected to be older than 65 by the year 2030. That's like almost 10% of the labor force is expected to be older than 65 by the year 2030. David, any of those shocking to you?
Almost 11 million over 65 still working. There's 57 million people in this country over 65. So you're taking about 20% of people are still working after the retirement age. And then you just rattled off some stats about how that age is getting older and when they retire every 10 years. I mean, think about when we're going to be 65, Jay. I mean, what year is that going to be? Add 30 years to now, so we're in 2052. I just fear that that number of retirement is going to get higher and higher and higher in 72, 73, 74, 75. Just by looking at the numbers, I really anticipate half of the people over 65 years old will still be working by the time we are retiring. That's the bottom line. And it's a little scary, but just trying to put it all in perspective a little bit.
I think about possibly retiring in 30 years from now or whatever it may be based on this conversation. And that 10% of the labor force is expected to be older than 65 by the year 2030. When we see AI moving at the speed it is, these numbers literally terrify the hell out of me. I'm telling you right now, mark my words, if the human population does not put some form of control, I don't know how much control, but some form of control on AI, it is going to take over in a way that's terrifying. That is my prediction. We as a country need to adopt it for international power, because if other countries adopt it faster, we will be losing power and strength. So there's this race to adopt it as fast as we can, from our children to our elderly, because for global power, we're going to have to. If you adopt it too fast, what happens to infrastructure? And to me, that's the biggest question mark.
It's terrifying. It's terrifying. I don't use AI because I'm just scared of that stuff. I probably should. I also probably need it to be a little more efficient, but that's neither here nor there. Now we're in that next stage of AI, right? How much are we bringing in for efficiency, for the economy, for profit? But what is the impact on Americans, right? American jobs, American workers, American economy as well. Scary evolution. And then once AI becomes the norm, what's the next thing that we got to worry about? It's just scary.
I know. I'll have some more stats on divorce in the U.S. because that was a big conversation on this episode of the premiere of The Golden Bachelorette. And David, you and I will talk a little bit about some other things financially related, even Social Security. We'll talk about some of the jobs that these contestants on The Bachelorette hold and some of your favorites and predictions. So you got anything else before I ring in the bell with Joan?
No, I hope the listeners enjoy.
All right, let's ring in the bell with Joan. Welcome back to another episode of Trading Secrets. Today, we are joined by the very first lead of ABC's The Golden Bachelorette, Joan. Joan gained recognition during her brief stint on the inaugural season of The Golden Bachelor before self-eliminating in week 3 to be home with her family. Outside of her time with Bachelor Nation, Joan works in alumni relations as a school administrator near her hometown of Rockville, Maryland. In addition to her career in the education space, Joan started started her own LLC focused on interior design. Today, we are going to chat with the newest leading lady in Bachelor Nation about her experience on The Golden Bachelor, the process of becoming the Golden Bachelorette, and all the tough questions that we have seen come to fruition after the premiere of The Golden Bachelor and what happened with Gary and Teresa. Because from those experiences, I think Joan is going to have some lessons for us and things she applied to her journey. Joan, thank you so much for being on this special Golden Bachelorette segment of Trading Secrets.
Thank you so much for inviting me. I'm like honored you want to talk to me.
Absolutely. I saw the first episode and I got to tell you, Joan, I think you are the depiction of elegance in class. And I feel like in Bachelor Nation, it is such a beautiful thing and something we are all so excited about. So first episode was amazing. And I want to get right into that. I saw a quote that you said, "My goal was to leave in a committed relationship. I didn't want to go through all this and be at the same place I was when I came to the mansion." So in episode one, we heard a lot about tragic stories of loss and divorce and so much hardship. My question to you is, when you're meeting these guys in such a short period of time, what questions are you asking to see if they've properly healed, if they've turned the page and are ready for this new chapter?
Wow, what a good question. You know, I'm not sure what like properly healed means. So I think it's like a journey and you may never get to the end of it. Like every day is a surprise or something different hits you in a way. So I'm not sure if I was looking for healed. I was looking for healed enough to want to move on.
Gosh.
And I think, you know, that we shared a lot of the same stories that we've had loss. Maybe like part of that healing process could be with somebody else. So you don't have to be completely healed coming into this. You can share that journey a little bit. You just have to be far enough along that you can, that you want a different life, that you don't want to spend the rest of your life mourning, that you want to spend the rest of your life like I did, you know, with somebody else. I loved being married and that feeling of having my best friend and having the person I'm planning my future with. So as long as they were at that point in their process, then they were good. And so I talked about, you know, how you ended up here and tell me about your relationship with your family and, you know, how hard it is to be away. I just need to find out if they had the similar values, because you have to assume that if they're on the show, they have moved along at least enough in their own minds that they are ready to date.
Yeah, I love that. I think it's perfectly said. You don't have to be fully healed. You just have to be in a healthy place to take that next step. One of the things you had just said is if they're on the show. Now, every season, one thing we ask ourselves, if they're on the show, are they there for the right reasons? This is the first Golden Bachelorette ever. It's the first group of men at this age. Yeah. During your course of filming, did you ever have to ask yourself, or did you have any red flags that some of those people weren't there for the right reasons?
Maybe if I look back at the journey after having gone through it, there may be some, not red flags, maybe some pink flags that I could have seen. But in general, like 99% of my interactions were completely genuine and heartfelt, and the guys were vulnerable and they spoke from their heart. And I feel like I really got to know the real men. You know, it's hard to determine what somebody's objective is when they're in the space that we were in. I asked some really hard questions and people told their stories. Nobody made up stuff. Nobody hid things. Everybody was really vulnerable. So I think 99% of the interactions were very genuine.
I think that was one of the most refreshing things. Every season, first episode, you're kind of looking for the drama. Who's the troublemaker? And it was just refreshing story after refreshing story. And then just when you think you had enough, Jack comes in singing "My Way." And you're like, okay, this is unbelievable.
Jack was so good. Plus he could cook. He was awesome. And he had the biggest personality, which by the way, in that room, a lot of personality. You're going to get to know the guys so much better than you have in at least the Golden Bachelor season, because the shows are a little longer and like you get to hear like these great stories, and these guys have some personality.
I can't wait. And I'm sure they have stories with how far they've come. A question I'm going to ask you, I asked Jen when she was on the show, and it was before the finale aired. We talked about first impressions, because this is also a business and finance podcast, and the power of first impressions, dating or right in just the work world. And she said that three of the four of her final four didn't make great first impressions. So I just had that interview. I got to ask you, how does that compare to your final four, what Jen had said about her experience?
Okay, let me think about that. Okay, so my final four. So all my final four were guys that I liked up front. So they were real, they made good first impressions, but not necessarily because they did anything epic or, in fact, one of them didn't make a great first impression, and I liked him just because he was really nervous. So yeah, there was something that, like, even if he didn't like do his speech like he had planned, or he, you know, felt uncomfortable, you could tell he was really, really nervous. That made me like him, like maybe even more. So I think as far as first impressions, I had a lot of empathy for the guys coming in because I knew how incredibly nervous I was when I was in the limo. So I kind of gave them all passes on their first impressions. I didn't want to make that like a big part of it because I'm not sure if you're true, you're like true awesome self when you're coming out of that limo under that like high stress situation.
Yeah, I like that perspective too, because it's like, I just remember when I came out, I don't remember anything. Like you black out under that stress.
Isn't it amazing?
It's crazy, but it's also good. It's good and refreshing to hear that four for four, maybe it's not about what they did. Maybe it's not about what they said, but from the first impression of how they made you feel, you went four for four with your final four, a little bit different.
We love that. Yeah.
All right. Cool. Well, another question I got for you, we already talked about Jen. Let's go down history, right? History is a meaning of learning what happened yesterday to maybe prevent or look different as to what tomorrow could look like. When you saw what happened with the first season of The Golden Bachelor with Gary and Teresa, did you have any second thoughts about maybe pursuing the lead role?
I didn't, but I kind of look at like why their relationship ended, and it was because of basically geography, because I did witness them falling in love. And so I saw that the journey really worked, that Gary and Teresa ended up in a really good place at the end of the season. And I think it fell apart, at least in my opinion, was because of the geography. No one could figure out how to move. And I have a completely different view about that issue in, you know, forming a relationship. And like, it's my opinion is I'm never moving. Or at least no time soon. I have like multi-generational responsibilities, and I have a mom and a mother-in-law who are still alive. I have kids and I have grandchildren, and I don't want to leave them. And I say responsibility, but they're also the joy in my life. And I don't want to be without them. I don't want to not be able to see my grandchildren several times a week. And I also have a lot of friends, and I've spent a lot of years building a really meaningful and rich life. And I want to be with somebody who is the exact same thing. I want somebody who loves their family, who has lots of friends, who has a really cool life. And I don't have to live in the same town as they have. Like our lives can be running parallel, and I can go visit him and he can come visit me and we can spend lots of time together. And it doesn't have to require somebody giving up something so big as their life that they spent a lot of time building. And maybe one day, and hopefully one day, you'll merge and you'll be able to live together full time. But that shouldn't be a requirement at this age. There's just too many factors, and you shouldn't, you know, living in the same place is going to require somebody to give up too much.
Yeah. I think success of relationships is predicated on the idea of having these proactive conversations, the tough ones. And I think with Teresa and Gary, we saw a lot of those conversations came after the fact, or at least we heard those after the fact. And on your teaser towards the end of the episode, we saw a whole lot of action there. But one thing we didn't see was this answer. And I'm wondering with the people you're dating, did you set that boundary from the get-go? Did you say, hey, we can move in our own lanes, we could do our own thing, but I'm not moving? Or was that a conversation that came up later in the journey?
I had it before the journey. I actually did some press and I answered that question. And I also had that conversation as like I started forming connections with people. I made sure all of them knew that. Like, I don't, say you don't have to accept a rose from me at the rose ceremony. If you don't think we're a good match, it's like a two-way street. You need to know like what my parameters are. And if that's a red flag for you, you should not accept a rose. And I made that really clear that this was two-way street. I might not be the right person for you, just like you might not be the right person for me, but let's just get it all in the open. And like, that's the whole thing about this journey. Every conversation you have is important. You have to learn things about the people because you are potentially picking a life partner. You can't have stupid conversations about like, what kind of dog do you like? Like, I mean, maybe that's important. It is kind of. So you can't, you need to have important conversations. And And you can't, and every conversation has to be important because you don't have that many opportunities. So right. You have to say things like, you don't have to come with me. I'm not coming to live with you either.
I love it. It's getting down to the deep foundation because it's the foundation that will drive the success. It's perfectly said. You said red flags, and a lot of times on these different interviews and podcasts, you'll talk about red flags or beige flags or green flags you're looking for in a relationship. We don't talk about that. We talk about, though, financial red flags. So are there any financial red flags for you or money habits or anything in the categorization of finance and money that you see in a significant other that you're like, nope, not for me?
Not for me. So my husband and I worked really, really, really hard to create a really nice life. And we did, but it required a lot of work and a lot of hours and a lot of time away from the family. John spent a lot, many, many, many hours at work. And we ended up being really financially secure. And so I wanted somebody that was in the same place as me. Because I, you know, let's face it, like doing cool things in life often isn't free. It often costs money.
Yeah.
And so I wanted a partner that had the same resources that I had. So, you know, those conversations, I could either just kind of tell based on maybe their professions and things like that. And also, you know, when you get behind closed doors, when you get to fantasy suites, you do talk that. Those are important conversations. It sounds so like not lovey to have those conversations, but God, this is real life. Like you can talk about love and feelings and about all those things, but you also need to talk practical. And that was a practical conversation I did have with people.
I think a lot of leads in the future can learn from you from that. Because with my book, Talk Money to Me, I think I interviewed over 10 leads, 30-some fantasy suites. And now one of them talked about money and career in the fantasy suite. So it sounds like that's something you tackled. You mentioned, and I know you and your husband had, you said in your intro package, you guys met at 20 and 21. You then build this wealth together. One conversation that I see and I have with almost every guest that comes on here, but also we've seen in the former Golden Bachelor, is the concept of prenups. And I'm curious if you have a take for, against, or just any opinion on prenups in general as you go through another chapter for yourself when it comes to love and also protecting your assets.
Good question. I think I believe in a prenup, not because I don't think that a marriage is going to last. Like it's not a, you know, it's not a statement about a marriage, but I will always, always, always be in a mode to protect my children. And I want my assets to go to my kids. And they lost their father. They've already had enough loss. I want to make sure that they have what's left of what I have. And so it's all about not a statement about marriage, but about my protecting my children.
Brilliant. I absolutely love it. One thing I wanted to ask was, we heard that you said you've only been in love with one person, but more than one now. That was on a teaser. We also heard a little, there's something I thought I heard, I love you, Mark. Good friends with Kelsey and Joey. So my one quick question is, we've seen it on many seasons. Did you fall in love with more than one person?
I honestly fell in love with a lot of people. To be truly honest with you, I formed connections with most of these men. You know, there's a thing about older men when they're vulnerable and you just want to take care of them. And, you know, I fell in love quickly. I formed like amazing friendships and I feel like we left there knowing each other like so deeply. So I fell in love with probably 20 men, to be honest. I really did. They were just such great men. And it was such a privilege that I got to be with them and to like, they shared their lives with me and I shared mine back. Like, you know, you go through stuff with these guys. It's crazy being on the show, the amount of stuff that you revealed to like total strangers really soon, but you form these really strong bonds because you do that. So I fell in love a lot. I left that show exactly where I think I need to be. It, you know, life has a way of unfolding the way it's supposed to. And I believe that this really did.
It's beautiful. We are all rooting for you. The last thing I got for you, Joan, is on trading secrets. Everyone comes and gives a trading secret. So it's something they can't learn from a professor or textbook. I'd like to keep your trading secret to your experience that you just finished. So what would be your biggest trading secret from the experience as the first ever Golden Bachelorette? What can you leave us with?
So as a person that kind of came into this whole Bachelor Nation, starting with the Golden Bachelor, and then even as the Golden Bachelorette, I was afraid. And so I feel like a statement about fear, like, and one of my favorite sayings is fortune favors the bold. And so go out and do something bold, do something that scares you, because I feel like every time I've done something that I've been scared about, I've grown so much as a person. So I'd say fortune favors the bold, do something that scares you.
do something that scares you. I'm sure you're scared at times in this journey. But Joan, thank you so much for coming on. I'll tell you what, my mom and all her friends, majority of them are happily married, but they are going to be sitting around with popcorn. They've already talking about how hot all the guys are. They can't wait to watch it. And I wish you all the best. And thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me and wanting to talk to me. I appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Bye.
Awesome. Bye, Joan. Good luck with everything.
Thank you.
Ding, ding, ding. We are going to recap that interview with Joan, the Golden Bachelorette, just after her premiere with the one and only David Arduin. David, we are back. I got some numbers on Social Security and divorce I want to talk through. But before I get into numbers or what these guys do for their careers or what your thoughts were on the episode and who might win, I got to ask you, what'd you think of the interview?
I thought it was awesome. I've came on these recaps before and be like, man, I really want to get a beer with that person. I don't want to get a beer with Joan. I want to sit down and pour a nice stiff bourbon and get to the hard hitting questions. Cause her answers, bang, they hit you in the face. She knows what she wants. She's been through a lot. I thought her answers were awesome. I thought your questions were great. So well done to the both of you.
Thank you so much for saying that. I think she strikes me as more of a wine gal, but hey, bourbon, wine, beer, whatever it might be, I agree with you. It was so nice and refreshing to speak to Joan. I'm bummed I only got 15, 20 minutes, but something tells me we will get more time down the road. She is a busy gal, and she is a busy gal dating a lot of men. By the way she has talked in interviews about the way she carries herself and, you know, this is about intimacy that is deeper than physical, and she's going to be very reserved with physical intimacy because she wants to make sure she's connected. I think for the first time ever, we're truly seeing, like we're actually seeing a lead do something way different. And even in this interview, like you said, David, the answers were way different. They weren't scripted. They were real. We got into moving. We got into prenups. We got into financial red flags. We got in to a whole hell of a lot. What interview question were you like, oh, damn, I didn't expect her to step into that?
I mean, the lead is leading. Let's just say that that's what she's doing right now. She's leading. It's on her terms, which I love. The thing that shocked me the most initially was she said she's never moving. But then she explains it, kind of like all the things that we'll get into the prenup after. But all the things she kind of explained, it's like, that makes sense. Societal pressures will probably make it feel like that's like, I can't believe she answered it that way. But she, the moving thing, I mean, she just said too many factors at age. Being in the same place requires someone to give up too much, right? I'm going to assume because of what she said is important to her, that the person that she ends up with, people I don't know. So this isn't a spoiler. This is just me being a fan of the show. I'm going to assume that they have a family. I'm going to assume that they have kids. I'm going to assume that they have a tight network. And she probably recognizes that and says, I'm not going to ask that person to give up because I'm not going to give it up. And I loved how she said she talked about this in the fantasy suites. It was probably music to your ears, the conversation she was having. So I think that question in a nutshell was like, oh, this girl means business.
That question was exactly what you said. This girl means business. But that question also, it was, you know, those moments where someone says something and immediately you're just really actively listening. So you're not digesting to respond. And then like a day later, it hits you and you start thinking, well, that's what happened with this one. Because I thought a day later, and I know that the cast doesn't travel for like 4 or 5 weeks. They're in the mansion for 4 or 5 weeks, which is someone who's been in the mansion, David, that's fucking hell. Like yes. You have these tiny little bunk beds. It's so tight in there. That's not what you want. But it's also probably more challenging in hell 2.0 to get some of these people to travel. Like, you know, the older you get, it's harder to travel. The aches and breaks and the body, it takes a toll. So I think about it. I'm in a long distance relationship. I know the challenges and burdens and living in a plane and planning the next trip and considering moves and all these things. It's a lot. It's hard. How at that age do you manage that type of travel? How do you go back and forth and maintain your families and do it in a healthy manner, not only mentally, but physically? I don't know because I'm 35 and doing it. And I'm telling you, it's a lot. How is it possible?
I was in a long distance relationship with Ashley for 3 years before I moved and we got married. So I think you're probably no spoiler alert, hopefully on the path to do the same. I think with this situation, I think again, back to Joan's like adamancy of what she wants. I don't recall, and I could be wrong. I don't think she's recalled that she wants to get married. like that she needs the traditional view of marriage. Like I get that they're getting older, but I think she really wants a life partner. I think she really wants someone that she can FaceTime, that she can text, that can, she can share moments with, that they can spend those moments with each other's families. But she's not, I don't think she's wanting the same thing that every bachelor and bachelorette comes on for the show, which is starting a life with someone and having those memories in a traditional household. I think that she's really looking for someone that she can live life with, right? Not necessarily beside, wake up to every day. There'll be moments for that. But I think she's just being real about this whole thing and where they're at in their lives. And she's looking for someone. And she even said, you never know what it can evolve into. But I think she's just looking for someone right now that she can do life with. And that's the way that she's going to do it. But yeah, traveling sucks. Logistics suck. Planning sucks. It adds a stress to a relationship. But I think at least she's being open and honest about that in the short term.
Yeah.
And usually the people who are open and honest about that in the short term, they're the one that ends up wanting to move in with the partner the first because they're just so in love. So I think that's my read on the situation.
Interesting. Now, one thing we also talked about was money. We talked about financial red flags. We talked about prenups. So I want to get into some things that I think people would be interested by. When you look at Social Security, right now, this is a huge source of income for those that are senior citizens. Social Security accounts for half or more of income for 37% of men 65 plus and 42% of women 65 plus. And we heard Joan talk a little bit about, you know, I've accumulated wealth. I want that wealth to go to my kids. And I want someone that meets me there. And I want someone that's successful and that's doing well and that's making some money and has done well by themselves. And good for her for knowing what she wants and being certain to speak about it and not feeling shame around it. Now, in a lot of the storylines of the men, David, we heard about divorce. So I do have some statistics on divorce for you. In 2022, there were 673,989,000 divorces. So we're talking about almost 700,000 divorces. There were 2.1 million marriages in the United States in 2022. Now, here's some alarming statistics I don't think are surprising to anybody, or at least the first statistic won't be surprising. 43%, that's the current rate that we found, of all first marriages in the United States end in divorce. 60% of second marriages end in divorce. Wow. 73% of third marriages end in divorce. And only 6% of divorce couples actually remarry. The average length of a marriage before a divorce is 8 years. The average cost of a divorce is $7,000 to dissolve the marriage. That seems very, very low. And those are some interesting statistics about divorce. Now, we've talked about loneliness at this age. We've talked about divorce. We've talked about income. And we've, of course, obviously talked about loss. All things that came up in this interview or the first episode of The Golden Bachelorette. You watched it. What do you think as it relates to those things? And what are some takeaways you have from the episode?
I mean, hearing those statistics is alarming. If you get a divorce, let's just hope before you think about getting married again off those statistics, you have good friends that are telling you that you should really think about this, because those are you're set up to doom. I think too interesting that you said, you know, these stories of these men and even Joan herself, there's a lot of stories of divorce. Obviously, I don't know if you noticed or not, everyone who got a video as part of their limo entrance was someone who was divorced through widowing. I think except for one person who was divorced through addiction. That's TV, right? Those are the most heart-wrenching. I mean, I've got tissues and at my side for these stories. So that all plays into it. I think the conversation that you had with her in the interview about the prenup in particular, as it goes to dollars and cents, it's such a different conversation than someone who's getting married for the first time.
Wait, real someone's quick. Who, you said divorce, yeah, by widowing. That took me a second, but you just meant they lost. They lost their significant other.
Yeah, they're not with their partner because of death. So,
yes, okay.
But when it comes to the prenup side of things, your first marriage, you're getting a prenup for predicted future, right? My career is this. I'm going to probably continue on my career. We're going to have kids. It's all predicted. Where she's at now, I loved her statement. They said, because she's a believer in prenups, especially at her age, she goes, they lost their father. A prenup is right now is not a statement about marriage. It's for protecting her children. So her view on everything now is clearly it has nothing to do with the marriage. It's all about her kids. The perspective of it was so crystal clear. Yeah, like you said, she wants something to match her level and lifestyle and wants to be successful. At 61 years old, after all that she's been through, 33 years of marriage, she should want, and everyone should want exactly what they want at that age. You've been through so much to be at that point to try and change your hope for someone to give you anything different. So I'm all for that and the conversations you guys had and her stance on it.
Amazing. We've talked about it in depth on this show. I'll give everyone a brief update. Prenuptial agreement, right? You sign it before marriage. The agreement will establish the rights and responsibilities for each of the spouses in the event of divorce or death. And they're often used by couples that have some form of significant assets or complex financial situations, but of course, customize appropriately, maybe depending on when you get married and how you get married, right? I know myself at 35, I've accumulated a lot of wealth. I have a lot of businesses. You know, it's without certainty that in some way, shape, or form, I will have a prenup when I get married. Postnuptial agreement is something that's signed after marriage. The agreement addresses financial matters that change during the marriage. Postnups are often used when couples experience financial changes of some level during the marriage. Maybe it's a big business, it's a career shift, it's blended families, it's inheritances, etc. So just so you guys understand, prenup, postnup. David, any more on the actual episode? Talk to me about first impressions, the guys you liked, the guys you didn't like, predictions. What do you think we can expect? Who would you want to have on the podcast? All the questions in one related to this episode. What do you got?
Okay. So first off, I don't know if she spoiled something. You asked her about her first impressions for her Final Four. I don't know if she spoiled something. And again, I don't know the spoilers. I just have a shit ton of notes in front of me. Literally, I went every Jay. I was so dialed in, had my laptop out, every guy that came out of the limo in order, where they're from, their age, their job, couple notes about every time they showed up on the episode. I color-coded them. Guys I like, guys I don't like, guys who I still need to learn more about. But I think that she spoiled something because one of the guys, I have my first bullet point. It says nervous AF in capital letters. And she said that one of her first impressions, the guy was super nervous. If you watch the first episode, the name is Jordan, sales manager from Chicago, 61. Super, super nice guy. So I think that she might have done something there. But if I want to have someone,
I need to understand that. Like you're drawing a lot of conclusions here, which is why I love you. The curious Correct. Canadians being curious. But you're saying one of the people in her Final Four made a good first impression, but was nervous at first. And that was endearing. And in your notes, when you watched, your perception was that Jordan, 61, was nervous.
Nervous AF, actually, capital letters. Nervous as fuck. Yes.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. But there's two guys. If we had to have anybody on the podcast right now, there's two guys. One, Gary. Gary, 65, retired finance exec for California. He was dancing. He's electric. Oh, he's the biggest bubbly energy. Just a huge vibe guy. He is the massive vibe guy. And then the number one, the be all end all the show. Main character energy. Yeah, I can say this. He got the final rose, and I think I texted the group chat, Trading Secrets group chat, while I was watching, and I said, if Jack doesn't get a rose in this episode, I'm going to have an absolute meltdown. And Joan, she saved him to the end, which makes me think he's main character energy. This guy's cooking. He's got the pink jacket. He's singing. He is electric. Jack, you are main character energy. You are my favorite. But I don't think he's going to win. I have my winner under my cap who I think is going to win.
Okay.
I can say no or I can save it.
My three favorites. We'll go to your winner prediction in a second. Okay. And I want to preface everyone. Listen, I'm going to shoot it as real as I can with you guys here. There are times we know who won, right? And we're doing our best to just shut up and, you know, play along during the season. I can tell you, or at least we know we have an idea of who won. I can tell you with 100% certainty, David and I don't have a fucking clue. We don't know. Like, we have not talked to anybody. I haven't seen a spoiler out there. And I mean that, like, with every bone in my body, I don't have a damn clue. So these are literally all shooting from the hip. The three people I just love, David, like, loved. I want to go get a beer with them. I want to hang with them. I want to have a martini with them. Charles, guy was just so sweet. A kind soul. Jack, my way, singing, having fun. You know, he's got the coffee in the hand. Joan walks by him and he's like, hey, how you doing? And she's getting the first impression rose to someone else. And he's like, huh. And then, of course, Mark, Kelsey's father, I had the pleasure of having dinner with him, talking to him. David, you would love it. He's a former hockey guy. Dude, 6'5", beefy, monster, burly man, was in the Army, served, lived in Germany while serving, you know, lost his beautiful, kind and sweet wife. When he played hockey, he was an enforcer too. Some of the best part was going out there and scrapping. I'm like, wow, David would love him. You know, people I think that are going to go far, you can't, first impression, Rose always has a big up, right? Like, we just know that historically. That was Keith. I think he's going to go far. I think, you know, we saw Mark in the teaser had one-on-ones and was shown. And I think the audio said, I'm in love with you, Mark, or something like that. So I think Mark goes far. I think Chalk is going to go far. I think Guy.
Chalk and noodle soup.
Yeah, Chalk and noodle soup. I think the emergency room doctor, I think he was the one that was
Guy,
he was crying at the rose ceremony, right?
He was.
Right? So there's something there. If you're crying at the rose ceremony, I understand that there's something real here, but if you're crying like that, to me, like, I'm getting goosebumps while I'm saying it. There was something that must have happened with their connection that was super deep, shown or not, because you don't have tears like that. I've been in that room. It sucks. 2 hours, you're sitting there. It sucks. If he's crying with emotion, something happened. Something happened. So those are my predictions, and I'm really enjoying it. I think the other guy too, that you and I had a little discussion about, a little debate on this one. Our Frenchman, Pascal, I liked him. I thought he was sweet. You think he's a villain.
Listen, she said on your interview, 99% of the guys are there for the right reasons. And there's some pink flags that now that she knows, I think Pascal, I mean, you saw his intro video. He's in the salon. He's doing his thing. He's walking around his mansion. He's got his nice cars. And the thing I love about Golden Bachelorette, guys, they're throwing him chirps. They're questioning his accent. He's a French guy from Chicago. I got red flags I'll use Joan's term, pink flags about Pascal big time. My top three, Mark, Keith, like you said, I think Guy's the winner. That's my guy.
Why do you think that?
I think when he walked out of the limo, she looked at him in like a way where she forgot she was the lead on a TV show. She was like, oh my God, that's the best looking man that I've ever seen in my life. And she, her energy towards him was like more giddy and like almost forgetting to be this like strong, powerful lead chef. It just felt she was a little more like vulnerable around him in a sense of like,
wait a second. Let's go back to your observation. Yeah. Do you think he was nervous?
I think that so here's my take on Guy. I think he's an ER doctor.
Yeah.
And he's a stud. I mean, he was well-dressed.
So, oh, ER doctor. We know. Okay. Yeah. You're heating up
so
now.
So I think that he walked out of there with a lot of confidence. And I think when he walked out of the limo to when the rose ceremony was done and he's got tears in his eyes, I think in that 12-hour process, he came out of the limo thinking one thing. And then when he was after the rose ceremony, I think he was like, oh my God, this is real. Real emotions. I'm in it. Like, I'm now in it. Like, I didn't think I'd be in it. I'm an ER doctor. I'm a stud, like da, 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 da. I'm from Reno, Nevada, which is just like electric in itself. I just feel like I think Guy is in it and I think he's going to win.
So your prediction's set in stone. You also mentioned Guy being so good looking. I'm now on the Golden Bachelor I'm looking at Guy's picture. It's ridiculous. This guy has perfect teeth, great hair, great jawline. But now I'm looking at all these guys again.
They're all studs.
Dude, what the fuck are these dudes taking? Chalk, Bill, Bob, Charles. I mean, all of them. Dan, David, Gary, our retired finance guy. I need Gary on the podcast, by the way.
Yeah.
You got Guy. Jonathan looks like he just stepped out of a fucking magazine.
Jacked.
Kim, the retired Navy captain. Honestly, I was like, this dude's Santa Claus. Mark, the first time I met Mark, I was getting nervous. I'm like, this guy's got such fucking star energy. Pasquale, like him or hate him, I like him. You're
stud.
Stud. Thomas, you know, all these guys, what are they on? What are they doing?
Well, Rewired's got it. Rewired Talent Agency. Let's get these. We got to get some skincare deals. We got to get something for these guys because these guys got it. Like, these guys got it. They got it going on. And just the level of conversations that they're having is so much more pure. I almost got so angry at the show for doing the stupid pickleball thing in the parking lot because the energy of these guys, you could even see on camera while they're doing this little pickleball thing. They're like, why the fuck are we doing this? This is so stupid. Whereas like if you did that on The Bachelorette and it was a bunch of like jocks and like guys with like tons of like, it's like you know someone's trying to do too much or stick out, and now a villain's created from that. These guys are like, what are we doing here?
Yeah.
This isn't why I signed up for this show.
This is a joke.
And they didn't do another cheesy ass thing like that the whole time. I thought the video messages from the kids in the room was like,
unbelievable.
I cried. Like, why is this the first time we doing this?
I cried five times in this episode. But what I'm worried about, David, and we'll see, is we talk business, we talk economics, we talk numbers. Numbers don't lie. What I'm worried about is, this what America wants to see? Maybe it's what Jason and David want to see. Maybe it's what my mom and all her friends want to see. I know that. But is it what America wants? I'm hoping it is. I'm hoping it's going to restore the faith of entertainment and media after the last disaster we just saw. Poor freaking Jen, but I'm hoping it takes off because I'm loving it. I'm loving it. We're all driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, just match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites. One thing I love about Indeed is that it's hiring in one place. It's simple, it's easy to use, and if you're looking for a job, it's so easy to search. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences to be the best for you. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/hire. Just go to Indeed.com/hire right now and support our show by saying we sent you there. Indeed.com/hire. Terms and conditions apply. You need to hire, you need Indeed.
I do think with the premise of the golden, this is like, as Joan said, like how proud she is to be able to represent people in their golden era. I think that people want to see this. No one wants to see drama with old people. I'm sorry. Like, no one wants to see it. Drama with like middle-aged 20s, like still figuring out life, like it's a little more socially acceptable. I don't think anyone wants to tune in and see drama. I think people want to see these people who've been through so much find love, but also like find themselves. And like she said, I thought it was a beautiful that she said, no one is properly healed. Everyone is on their healing journey and realizing that it's okay to move on. People want to see that. All these guys, if Mark doesn't win, if Keith doesn't win, if Jack doesn't win, my God, do I hope at this age they're able to come through this premise and just feel a more zest for life. Like, that's what I want to see.
Exactly. We love the heartthrob story. Two emotional guys here that just absolutely love it. David, the last thing I'm going to wrap with, and then you could say anything else that's top of mind on this episode, is Jordan. I want to read his bio for you. I think he might be you. Jordan is a glass half full kind of guy. The dad is extremely family oriented, is very close with his three daughters and three brothers. When Jordan isn't working, he loves walking his dog, Mickey, along the lake, enjoying deep dish pizza from Lou Malini's, and playing ping pong, which I know you love, David. Jordan is warm and funny and really wants to meet a woman to grow old with. He hopes to find someone who loves being outside and trying new restaurants. Jordan also hopes his future wife isn't afraid to be silly and have fun because he doesn't take life too seriously. Life is never boring when Jordan's around, and he plans to make the most out of every second. He misses the days when visitors would stop by unannounced. He won Mr. Legs contest in college, and Jordan loves Thanksgiving Day food, family, and football. This is David Arterwin, everybody. Ladies and gentlemen.
This is how I know he's me, because you said Luminati's. The pizza place. So it's a deep dish guy.
No, Luminati's, dude, is the devil thing.
No, that's Illuminati.
No, this says, this says Malnati. Malnati.
Yeah, maybe we're both
Illuminati, Malnati, Laminati. Yeah,
who gives a shit? Jordan is I think he's the guy that I said before that he was. If I got in that limo, you know me, right? I would have this whole thing planned out. I'd be dialed in. I would not be able to get a single fucking word out of my mouth. We both know that that's the case. If I came out of that limo, Jordan did the same thing. And then I think she teased it a little bit. She said a guy who was super, super nervous gets in her final four. So I think Jordan's going to make it. The last thing that I want to say is this, Jay. I think the reason why, and this is just, I'm going to get a little deep here to end it. The biggest fear that I have in my life is twofold. One, I'm still a little afraid of death, right? Just like what happens after, but I don't want to get into that right now. Hmm. My fear that I've had since I was a little kid, okay, I want to say like 13, 14 years old, is, you know me, I'm curious Canadian, so I'm observant. I like to observe people, situations. The biggest fear that I've had is that when I get older, that people won't want to listen to what I have to say, that I won't be able to share stories, that I will be looked at as someone who's incapable because I'm old, I'm weak, or I'm sick, or I'm just not able to do everyday things like the youth or the middle-aged people of this world. It's always been something that, as you reference, as we go through Social Security, as we go through retirement, as you know, 28% of people are, live on their own after 65 years old. If I can't sit down and get the time and respect and appreciation of people to just talk, because at that point, all my life is going to be talking and sharing stories, that for me is what I fear the most. And that's why from a young age, I've always really respected my elders and given them the time or hold the door open for them. Or when I see them at the grocery store, help them with groceries or ask them how their day is going. What this show does is restore, I think, in a way, the knowledge and experience and really just passion and compassion that people of entering this age in their life have. And I think it's really, really special. You know, the last thing that I'll say is in that opening scene where she talked about her husband dying and she said she was pretending it wasn't happening because of their life was so perfect and she couldn't even put himself there. She checked him on at 1:30. He was alive. At 3:30, she was dead. She had the guilt of not being with him when she died. And then she talked about just sitting there in the room with them and the reality of what her life was setting in. Like, to me, that moment, that time, the perspective of what her reality was and what her reality is now, I just think that this show is, what I want to see out of the show is keep learning from these people and keep having them to be an example. So when I get old, people understand, you know, that there's so much for people in their 60s and 70s and 80s to give.
Yeah, I mean, perfectly said. I think it's a great way to wrap this special and unique episode. I think when she told that story, the first thing I said to myself is it wasn't that her husband died alone. In my head, the way I interpret it is that her husband wanted to wait for her to leave so he could let go and she didn't have to see it, which is so like intense and hard. That's how I perceived it. And it's weird that you brought this up because last night before bed, I'm scrolling and I saw a pastor who was doing a speech to a college. And what he said is, I have seen thousands of people on their deathbed, thousands. And never once before they were dying, did they ask to bring in the trophies? Did they want to see the rewards, their accomplishments? Never once did they ask for them to bring in the college degree. Never once did they reference their successes. All they wanted when they were dying, every one of them, are the people they love in that room with them. And what he said is, you're going to go through life and there's going to be so many distractions. And eventually, whether it's on your deathbed or it's now, you're going to realize the most important thing in your life are your relationships, your friends, and your family. End of story. The question is, how long will it take for you to learn that? And so that hit me hard. That hit me in so many ways. That got me thinking. And it's so true and it connects to what you said. And I'll wrap with a trading secret here and then maybe we'll get one from you. I think to your fear, a trading secret I would have for you is when you are being influenced by people that are older than you, or someone is captivating you that's older and you want to learn from them, pay attention as to what they're doing, as to why you are listening to them, motivated, inspired by them. I have done this. And one thing I have found is that because I'm younger and things have changed and the people that are older don't know what's currently trending, don't know it, I am turned off when someone older tells me, speaks to me, commands. You lose me. Because I know my experiences are different than you. The people I listen to all day and ask for advice and want to talk to are the people that are older that have the ability to listen and see that I see life from a different lens in a different age, really hear me, and then provide wisdom based on their experience. And so that's something I've noticed. I would say to you, try to give that a go. And I think your fears will subside. What trading secret can you leave us with?
That, I mean, that was a great one. And I have a lot of, as you're saying that, I'm seeing people in my life that have done that at the older age and how much I lean on them because there's a level of understanding and support there.
Yeah.
I don't trading secret right now, but this world needs more happiness and joy. And I think the show is providing that. And I would just say like trading secret is just, it's just so lame, but like truly it's the golden rule. Treat everyone as you would like to be treated. And I think no matter the age and the thing about The Bachelorette and the show is they do highlight people's tragic stories and traumas, but doesn't mean that they didn't happen, right? If they didn't highlight them, these things still happen and people don't talk about it and it doesn't get seen. So just understand that everyone's going through a battle that you might not know about and treat everyone with kindness and respect. It just makes the world a better place.
It's perfectly said. It's another thing I've been thinking about this weekend and we'll wrap here. It's that we live in a world that is constantly go, 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 constantly new things, new trends, new learnings, new everything. And a lot of the time when everything's changing and it's new and it's moving so fast, the thing we tell ourselves is we need to be better. We need to do more. We need to be more critical of ourselves. At least I do. And I've noticed I'm not giving myself enough love. So if that connects with you at all, you know, literally one thing I wrote this morning are what are things I love about myself? And I wrote them down. And after I was like, Jesus Christ, I haven't done this in forever. Because I think the world, the social media, the speed at which life is moving right now is kind of set up for negativity, set up for us to question ourselves, set up for us to be critics of ourselves. And I think if we don't proactively give ourselves that love that we need, we'll forget what we have that makes us so special. So I'll end on that note. We had a deep episode here with a deep episode of reality TV, which is rare. We touched on money, numbers, business, and the reality of aging in the United States. And Joan, you were a pleasure to have on. David, anything before we wrap?
No, I can't wait for the season. Truly, I will be mentioning it almost on every recap because I'm dialed in.
We will see what happens on the finale and if these predictions were correct. We have some great episodes coming up. We have Jonathan from Gen Season coming on. We have Jenna, who is Joey's partner from Dancing with the Stars. Oh, that was a great episode. And Kelsey is coming on to a solo episode with Kelsey Anderson. And David, I'll give you a little tease for that one. Tears happen.
Okay.
We'd see your tears. It's an emotional episode. It's a good one, and I can't wait for it. So thank you for tuning into another episode of Trading Secrets. Please, please, please remember, give us 5 stars. We would absolutely love it. Tell us what you liked about this episode. And most importantly, hit subscribe on that Apple, Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts. Go to YouTube, Jason Tardik, subscribe to that page, and we'll see you next week for another episode of Trading Secrets, one you can't afford to miss. Bringing